Yeah. Ricardo, Josh, and Michael on the airwaves. Starting it off with that drink of the day. Just a little banter, then we hit in the topics. This ain't just a segment, nah, we spitting logic. And ending it with the final thoughts. Cause this podcast headed straight to the top. Yeah, so get ready, go ahead and sit back. Cause you are now tuned to the Warehouse Rant.
And we are back. Welcome to the Warehouse Rats. I am one of your hosts, Ricardo. And to my right is my right-hand man, literally.
Mr. Micah. What up, y'all?
Now, today we are missing one crucial part of the Warehouse Rats podcast people, which is Josh. Unfortunately, he is on a camping trip. We truly feel like a Warehouse Red podcast member has fallen off, but he hopefully will be back next week.
And to really, you know, shine the light or pay respect or homage to our fallen soldier who is currently camping, we thought that we would take the podcast to a very rustic setting as well. So if you hear that background noise, that is not sound effects. We are live.
Live like a mosquito. No, yeah, yeah. So if you hear that, that's a zapper too. If you hear that ambient noise that's coming out, those little crickets, I was gonna try to make a cricket noise, but I don't know how to. That is literally outside of my parents' house, and it's a new studio for today because we are one and within. We're trying to synchronize our Warehouse Rats brethren.
Exactly. So, Josh, you may not be with us physically, but in spirit, we are embracing the great outdoors, just like you. Hopefully, you're having a great time with the family. And yeah, you know, looking at the stars, thinking about you, bro.
Every time that I think of you, I wish I'm a star, that somewhere you are thinking of me too.
Sing it, Ricardo, sing.
Cause I'm dreaming, Josh, with you tonight till Monday. Actually, I got Monday off, so not Monday.
How'd you manage that, bro?
I asked for it.
You've been taking a lot of days off lately. Yeah. Talk to me about that. What's up?
Well, I have a dentist appointment on Monday. Nothing big. I'm not losing another tooth yet.
You've rescheduled that, what, like 3 times now?
No. This is just a regular teeth cleaning. Just a maintenance.
But, like, didn't last time they were closed or something?
Yeah,
due to a power outage?
And yeah, last time they were closed because they lost power, and then I rescheduled, and then that's when I lost my tooth. And now it's just a maintenance thing. Just to keep those meat eater teeth in line.
You ever get that tooth filled with a gold one?
Not.
What are you going with?
Not yet. I'm not too sure yet. So you know what I was thinking lately, honestly, is because of the fact that not a lot of people really realize or notice it. I don't know if I'm gonna get it filled.
Okay, just leave like a little missing tooth.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
Because honestly, not a lot of people, unless they're being really nice about it, where it's too obvious.
Uh huh.
Not a lot of people really realize it's not there.
That's what's up, man. It's
how
like,
do you what do you think? I want to try this opinion.
It's like hockey player status. Be real with you. I didn't know you were missing the tooth until you showed me.
Right.
Because you got voluptuous lips.
Okay.
A beautiful woman would, you know.
Or man.
Or lovely listener. I mean, if you dabble that way.
No, I don't, but I'm not. I'm not
discriminating.
I'm not discriminating. Okay. It's 2021, and I feel like we're definitely at a point where we should, you know, consider it.
Everyone is welcome to think about your lips and your moose knuckles. So,
yes. Speaking about moose knuckles, what are we drinking today, sir?
You know what? I really wanted to bring another seltzer to the set called High Noon. But unfortunately, the store I stopped at did not have them stocked.
Right.
So to embrace the Canadian side, which, you know, us Americans, we support,
right.
You know, without us, gosh. Be a terrible situation for him. I brought a beer from the great land of Canada.
Ooh.
And with that, I believe it is called a Moosehead beer.
Okay, okay.
Can you bring the bottle to me,
yes,
Ricardo?
Yes, give me one sec, sir. Keep the listeners entertained.
Yeah, no worries. With that, I'm also sipping on an old one. Don't mind us. We just spilled a little beer on set.
It's okay. It's okay. Oh, they're in the freaking cooler. My bad.
Oh, you're good. Yeah, again, we are outside. Rustic setting, and that is ice in the background.
Yeah, buddy.
And yeah.
Let me get one myself.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, this is a lovely Moosehead Lager. We've been talking about marketing gimmicks. This has no marketing gimmicks at all. This is a straight to your face beer. It says Moosehead, and they give you an image of a moose head. And as you sip it, you get a nice aroma of Canadian maple syrup, along with a little antler. We're about to crack these open.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we don't have a bottle opener.
Yeah, hold on, give me one sec.
But conveniently, Ricardo knows how to use his cheeks. What he does is he sticks.
No, that's not how it happens.
The cap between his left cheek, and he uses the right cheek because he's stronger with that side to clench the cap. And as you hear, the right cheek.
It's working hard right now.
Just pop the cap.
There you go.
Thanks, Ricardo.
Now, if you see a little bit of brown stuff on there, just wipe it off.
That's okay.
It's organic.
I'm pulling a Fernando. Fernando is Ricardo's brother. And before he opens any beverage, he uses his shirt to do a thorough wipe down. Ricardo's right cheek is lacking strength as it worked so hard to get the first cap off.
I got it. No, yeah, he, it's kind of funny because I used to make fun of him all the time because he would, wipe down like his, let's just say he was drinking a Monster.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be like, and then he just fucking like grab his shirt and just like wipe it down as much as possible. And he's like, I mean, that's understandable.
It is. It's crazy though. I've never seen someone so conscious. And this was even prior to the COVID variants.
No, that's been going on since,
yeah,
I know him.
Yeah, this is just Fernando. He's a germaphobe.
Yeah, definitely.
That's okay. Yeah, you know, he doesn't like to be touched.
He told me one time the reason he did that was because supposedly he had heard before that a lot of like warehouses,
mm-hmm,
like that store a lot of these like Monsters and you know, any pretty much anything that's non perishable.
Yeah.
They have a lot of mice going around and just kind of pooping on,
right,
on these, right, things. And, you know, you never know, which makes sense.
Yeah. No, he's not wrong. We have no
real way to know, you know.
Yeah, unless we go to the manufacturer and you know, track down these mice. I mean, we work in a warehouse.
Yeah.
I've actually never seen a mouse in our warehouse, only birds.
Yeah. Well, let's just say a bird goes into a Monster warehouse or whoever makes Monster or whatever.
Yeah.
And they take a shit on top of one of the pallets that is going directly to your neighborhood store, and you don't wipe it down.
Yeah.
And you ingest all this bad bird poop that, right, is contaminated with bird influenza.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got the bird influenza and COVID.
Damn, man. Facts.
Facts.
Speaking to me.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this beer, this Moosehead beer? Does it tickle your moose knuckle at all? Does it,
you know,
spice it up?
I think that I was expecting a little bit stronger beer, since it says lager, like I've always known lagers to be a little bit more,
okay,
more hoppy, more flavorful.
Right, right.
This is more on the lighter side, with a little hint of like lager, like actual hops itself.
Yeah.
So it's not a bad beer.
Yeah, I mean, it's from Canada. They're lacking in, yeah, a lot of regards, so. Again, for them to make a strong beer is just not possible,
yeah,
unless we support them. And
well, you know what it is, though. You know what it is. So because they have their main focus is on producing maple syrup.
Ah, you're right. You're right.
They're not producing that much beer, and if they are, they don't. They got such low resources as far as actual hops.
Right,
because Canada is a very maple-ish country.
Yep, yep.
That they want to kind of, you know, make sure that they don't use it all on one batch.
Man, you're so knowledgeable, Ricardo. Yeah. I don't know if you're speaking the truth or
hitting
me with a wiki fact, but I believe you 100%.
Remember that these are wiki facts, which are 100% opinion-based.
Hell yeah. So, Ricardo, you know, in the spirit of Josh camping and us being outside with the wonderful ambiance, you know, before we really dive into this podcast, I just want to hear a little bit about your life in terms of camping and you know, engaging in the outdoor setting for recreation. Like, how do you feel about it? What have your experiences been?
So, I don't really have too much experience as far as the actual camping goes, what you would call camping. Now, maybe I have, maybe I haven't. Bonfires, like we talked about the last podcast, where bonfires was a very common thing for us, you know, just growing up, camping, or not camping, but just bonfires in general, drinking around the fire, doing some illicit drugs, potentially. I didn't partake because I'm a good boy.
Really?
But, you know, maybe grilling some hot dogs, some food, just at night, just a very good, I think it's a really cool thing to do.
So, you're like a 20% camper.
Well, let me ask you this, what would you call camping? Like, what is your, when you go camping, what do you do?
Right, so my definition of camping is a little bit different than I would think most people have as their definition. So for me, I seek out a federal area because federal area is free. And typically there are not trails to drive on. So I literally just go on federal land with my vehicle, avoid the trees if possible, and find a very remote spot where no one has ever camped or touched before. And with that, how I set up camp is basically clear out a little area, get a little campfire, and I do enjoy camping with inside my vehicle. Basically food storage, sleeping inside there with a nice foam mattress.
Okay.
So I think camping for me is just getting off the grid and no cell service, nothing of that nature. All you have available to you is the environment,
right?
And fire, and you're one with your thoughts to really ponder a life and what you want. So my definition of camping is no cell service, essentially.
But don't you think that it's kind of like that's something that you could possibly do in a somewhere else, you know, besides like this federal land that where you can potentially put yourself in an unfortunate predicament, like let's just say that you somehow hurt yourself or whatever, you know, whatever might be the case, you know, can't you do that somewhere else? I mean, where you do have cell service?
I guess give me an example.
Well, let's just say that you go down to your local campground. I know some people at work actually that can go down to camp. They call it campground. I'm not too sure, but they have like all the amenities. They even have like a pool and
yeah, that ain't camping.
Yeah, that's what they said is camping. Which I don't mean like you said. I'm agreeing with you on this because they have a pool and then they have a lot of families around where they're probably. I mean, that sounds pretty cool to be honest because you're just, you know.
It's like a rental trailer park gang.
Yeah,
it's like a Trailer Park Boys episode, and you kind of just come and go as you please.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I'm trying to say. Like, have you ever partaken?
Yeah, so I've definitely been to, like, KOAs.
Okay.
I've been to state campgrounds, things of that nature. I don't enjoy it because I like to get away from people. That's the thrill of camping for me is me being in nature by my lonesome self. So I am one with my thoughts and no distractions. And when I go to these state campgrounds or KOAs, gosh, man, the amenities, the amount of people, it's just like, if I'm going to do that, I might as well just get a hotel and be in the city. Be real with you.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, some of these, not campgrounds, but there's some of the actual camping, what do they call fucking camp trailers?
Oh, campers?
Campers, there you go.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm bilingual. some of these campers are so like sophisticated where they got a whole bunch of, you know, amenities that I don't know. It just you know, you make it. I seen it on TV where they kind of make fun of how some there are some people who are driving these $100,000 campers and they have all the amenities, you know, satellite TV and they have freaking AC inside and this and that. Does that make it where it's, you know, are you really camping at that point?
Yeah, I don't get that. I mean, you could definitely be lakeside or oceanside with one of those, and you don't have to have hundreds of thousands of dollars. I think that's maybe a thrill, but as far as calling that camping, that's not camping.
Right.
I mean, you could do a lot of sightseeing
around,
you know, the country, but
right.
Gosh, yeah, that ain't the life for me. But
I think one day we should go camping up north again. Not again because we didn't camp, but you know.
Let's camp next time.
Okay.
Like, let's do this sooner than later sort of thing.
Okay.
Or let's go out west and like we can do a little camping thing out west, man. Like, let's embrace this. Let's make this happen.
So my question to you would be, would I be able to take at least an air mattress?
100%, because
okay.
I bring a fold-out foam mattress,
okay.
Which is really, it's in line with the bed I sleep on.
Okay.
Very, very nice. I also sleep on my pillows.
Oh, my gosh. Here we go.
I'm not going to get into politics, but they are some of the best pillows, and the man may be crazy, but damn, can he make a pillow.
Are you serious about that or no?
100%.
Okay, because I really don't know. I remember seeing these commercials, I think, a long time ago, but I don't know what my pillow really is all about.
It's the softest, highest quality pillow that you can get at an affordable price.
I guess I just don't see what the difference between a my pillow and a generic, what are they called? Memory foam at Walmart.
So I'm a see it, believe it.
Okay.
Kind of person.
Okay.
And it sounds like you're on that as well. Hey, if you ever get a extra bit of change, go on the MyPillow website, order yourself one.
60% off if you
voted for Trump. But hey, we're not going to get into that.
No, he's actually I just saw him on a clip where he's boasting again his 60% off if you type in the code, the promo code OIN, I think. OIN, something like that. So he's
QAnon?
No, that's like the new Fox, pretty much. But they're really, I think he got into a fight with Fox where he pulled a lot of his ads out. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, let's make this happen. Let's get you on a MyPillow. I think they have a money back guarantee. So you're not absolutely satisfied, you can send it back free of charge, and you know they're not gonna hold it against you unless you didn't vote for Trump. So,
damn, it sounds like you know all about MyPillow.
Yeah, I'm a spokesperson.
Yeah, okay. That's good. Well, listeners, again, luckily we haven't had a car yet that has passed by, but we will eventually.
We will.
Because we are in tune with our missing comrade, Josh, who is camping or went camping.
Or is currently camping.
I don't know if he's currently camping, but let's just say he is and we're in tune with it.
We are.
Yeah. We're out here drinking cervezas and with the crickets and Lucky.
Laga.
I don't know where Lucky went.
He's probably hunting.
He probably is.
A little disclaimer, Lucky is Ricardo's dog. Beautiful dog. In personality. Very ugly in the face. Has a really weird nose, but he's the honest guy. He's a great dog. Great hunter. Great protector.
Mm-hmm.
He knows love.
He loves love. And also, he is, like I said, he's a Mexican-American German Shepherd.
He can speak two languages.
Yep. We can't speak, but he can take commands in both languages.
Fair enough.
Well, with that, guys, I want to take a break real quick and hear a word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back, okay? And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. From this break. Micah.
Yes, sir.
So, there's this great man that once said, with great power comes great responsibility.
Donald Trump?
Yeah, he was equal to Donald Trump, but not quite. But there was a greater man that said, your perspective is your reality. And I know we've been talking a little bit about this, and you had some different observations or certain thoughts about that, let's talk about it.
Yes, yes. So this particular individual that left us with such a great phrase to ponder,
mm-hmm.
your perspective is your reality. It just makes me really think.
Right, right.
About that phrase and what it means. So, mm-hmm. with your perspective, do you really have the ability to change an outcome or influence an outcome through your thoughts? So, let's say, you know, you ordered an entree at a restaurant, mm-hmm. right? And it wasn't to your liking.
Oh, that's hard.
Right? And I ordered the same thing, prepared the exact same way as you, but I enjoyed it. So my perspective is different, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think in that situation, right, your perspective, right, would be that you enjoyed it. My perspective would be I didn't enjoy it.
And why is that? That's what I'm trying to really understand. So if we all have different perspectives, we all have different realities. That's so mm-hmm. confusing for mm-hmm. me to understand. So does that particularly mean, like, if I'm in a negative situation or I have a negative perspective on something, I can simply change the way I think to have a certain mm-hmm. outcome? Mm-hmm. Or, like, I think it's just really confusing for me.
So let's just say that situation came across, right? My perspective would be, I had worse, and then I started thinking about all the situations, or not all situations, but in the past where maybe it's not that I didn't have anything to eat, obviously, because you could tell I definitely had enough to eat. But in the past, I guess, you know, ordering something from a restaurant or going to a restaurant to eat, that in itself is a luxury. Mm-hmm. And if you don't take that into consideration, I feel that you can be a little bit, I don't know what the correct word is. You can be a little bit privileged, I guess, you know.
Okay.
So if you take into consideration that a lot of people out there don't have enough to eat, that sounds really bad, just because it's, you know, it's a bad way to look at it. But I think just being able to really appreciate certain situations that you are faced with and compare it to other people. And like I said, it sounds really bad, but appreciating something that is so simple as eating out nowadays, because other people don't have that luxury. I think it's a very, I say a good concept to kind of think about, a good way to think about it anyways.
Gotcha. So basically your perspective on eating out is it's a luxury to have, and you're very thankful
right.
for that.
Right.
Whereas if you come from a lot of money or something
right.
Similar to that, if you dine out, it's the norm.
Right.
So you're not as appreciative. So those are two different perspectives.
Right.
Okay. Gosh.
Yeah, I was, I was telling you about what do they call it? Mayhem in the Palace? Or what do they call it? Don't want to run our test?
Yeah, so I don't really know the term, but for our listeners out there, I think it was back in about maybe
2004.
The Detroit Pistons and Indiana Pacers played a basketball game at the Palace of Auburn Hills, and they referred to it as the Brawl. So what
happened? The Malice in the Palace.
What is that?
I think that's what
okay.
it's called, yeah.
Okay. Well, a particular individual, a fan threw a beverage at him, and it started a brawl.
A chain reaction, pretty much.
Exactly.
Yeah, so the way he was speaking, right, his perspective was, I had all this fame, and I had all this money, and not just to that perspective, that situation itself, but just in general, he's had a lot of demons and stuff like that. Where he said, "Man, I had everything, but yet I couldn't be happy." He's like, I had so much anxiety and so much so much sadness inside of me. I don't know what was wrong with me. And I guess there was a a therapist who would go with them on the road, and would try to be there for them, you know. And he said that one time when he really realized that the privileges that he had was when he was trying to like a taekwondo karate artist, whatever they called.
Sensei?
Not a sensei. He was just a martial artist, whatever. And he was always like, he was so upbeat and so freaking like so nice and, you know, always in a happy mood. And when he would leave, in a freaking like old ass car and, you know, this and that. He's like, and he kind of, I guess it wasn't him. It was somebody else. I'm sorry. It was it was definitely a different person, but it was, another really rich person. He's like, I had all this money, all this power, but I wasn't happy. I had so much anxiety. He's like, then the one person that made me change my perspective was, one of my karate martial art teachers or coaches. He made it to where he really taught me how to love myself, love everything about life, and you know, not to get too biblical or anything like that, but he did go into more of a biblical sense where he learned to love Christ and this and that. And even though he came from a religious background, which he hated the religious background, he was able to put things in different perspective, the perspective of that person, that karate master. And just, you know, like I said, it might take somebody else's perspective for you to look at life a little bit differently.
Gotcha. So
I know I went into like totally different things, but sorry.
No, that gives a lot of clarity on this particular topic. So a pro athlete that's getting paid millions of dollars, has high status, recognizable, right, in society, you would think, okay, they have it all. Mm-hmm. You know, they must be happy because they can buy anything.
Right.
They can have anything. They have all this fame. But that was simply not the case.
Right.
And someone that has nothing but, you know, a passion, mm-hmm, for the martial arts and what they do, was able to give this particular individual a different perspective on life.
Right.
Just comparing and contrasting someone with nothing, someone with everything, one being happy, one not being happy, and the two of them connecting to share their different perspectives.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a very interesting thing because, like I said, he had a lot of power, he was super wealthy. This individual, right, that it was a different individual that kind of came across that, but he was definitely not happy. And he said he was actually a the other individual that I was talking about. He's actually a he was a Cuban American. He was actually part of like the Colombian mafia at the time, like back in the day. He used to sell a lot of cocaine, but once he got out the game, like he still wasn't happy, but he still had a lot of power, right? But He's like, I came across this guy, and you know, he's my. After I got out the game, you know, I used to do a lot of karate and a lot of martial arts. And he's like, the weird thing about this individual, he's always so happy and so, you know, energetic and just like really positive, right? But and it's like I wish I had that, and I didn't have it, and I couldn't buy it. He's like, that's the problem. And this individual, he would go home in a beater. Come over here in a beater, and you know, but I wish I had that type of mindset.
Certainly. So that kind of leads me into, you know, our experiences, mm-hmm, Ricardo,
yeah,
and kind of just leading off with yourself and you know, your perspective on a lot of situations. Do you feel like the way you think, you know, influences certain outcomes? Let's just take for example. Let's say, you know, you apply for a job,
right,
and you're turned down. You know, what perspective, you know, do you typically take or have you taken? And
well, I'm really good at this. I'm really good at applying at jobs and being turned down. But I genuinely think that if you're in that situation, I mean, the best thing to do is kind of really learn from yourself, learn about yourself a little bit, right? See where you're at as far as, especially if whoever interview you, if they give you any type of feedback, especially if it's positive feedback or negative feedback, just really be honest with yourself, because unfortunately, I think a lot of us individuals are not as honest as you really want to, right? So we look at ourselves sometimes, like, especially if we're in that situation, we kind of victimize ourselves, and victimizing yourself closes your mind a little bit as far as, like, okay, what's really wrong with you? You know what I mean? Like, not that there's anything wrong with you, but what is holding you back from achieving these goals? And if you don't have that open mind of, like, hey, maybe there is something wrong with you, and you need to work on that, pretty much. You know what I mean?
So would you say early on in your professional career, when you applied for certain jobs and were turned down, mm-hmm. Would you take a perspective of, gosh, this doesn't make sense? Or would you look at it with, okay, I presented who I am, the skills that I have, and I was not presented with the opportunity, but that does not mean I'm any lack of,
right,
of something. What kind of, you know, perspective did you take early on, and what has it transitioned to?
So it used to be more like a almost a victimized state.
And can you kind of elaborate on why you would take that perspective?
Well, because I think that especially when I was a little bit younger, you would come off, or at least I would come off as a very confident individual, right? And sometimes confidence is a great thing, right? And especially if you have that skill set and that work ethic to have behind all that confidence, right? It's great to have. But sometimes you gotta look at it and be like, hey, you know, maybe you're not as good as you really think. And even if you are as good as you think, maybe there's somebody out there that's a little bit more better suited for that situation. I think that's for that job. And I think that's the biggest difference nowadays for me is like if I apply for a certain job, right, and I get a call and I get an interview, maybe I didn't do so good in the interview, or maybe I felt like I did great. The reality of things is for me is two things, right? Either they already have somebody lined up for that job in particular, and they're just giving you opportunity to showcase your skill set, or there's somebody out there that has a better work history than you, or has a better relationship with the hiring manager or whatever. And I think that you shouldn't take that as a negative thing. You should just take it as what it is and be like, hey, unfortunately, that's part of life. And you could either go two ways. You could take it as a victimized, everybody's against me, or you could take it as like, hey, maybe, you know, maybe it's not my time yet, but something will come on, something will come my way eventually. And if that's not the case for you in that company in itself, where you try so many times, then maybe you should definitely pursue something else somewhere else as well, because maybe that company is not suited for you anymore.
Certainly. So essentially, when you were younger, you had a great deal of confidence, which, you know, we should all have.
Right.
And with not getting a job or being offered a position, you might question and take a victimized role. But now, as you've progressed through your professional career, you've developed a perspective and an understanding of, you know, why you may have been turned down,
right,
for a position, and taking that as fuel and using it to push yourself for something more. It's kind of, you know, what I heard. So
yeah,
so your perspective,
sure,
certainly has a great deal of influence
right.
on a particular outcome. Specifically, mm-hmm. you know, you speaking about roles you've applied for recently and not getting them and pushing you to seek more and, right. And you know, your perspective of saying maybe this company isn't right for right. my development or right for me pushes you to go outside the box. That, right. that's beautiful, man. That's huge.
And I also think, too, is like for me right now, like the biggest thing in my situation is what I know, or at least what I think I know, is the fact that even though I do have a high degree of skill set, I think that I can apply here at or where I work at, where we work at. In these roles, I feel that if I get more, let's just say, you know, big announcement. I am trying to get back to going back to school and trying to get my education, my degree. Because even though people look at degrees as kind of like, they are what they are, but they do unfortunately open up a lot of doors for you. You know what I mean? Whether it's with that company or somewhere else where you do have that experience and I say, like, my perspective, right, on my current role, there are a lot of negative things that I can look at, but I also love looking at the positive side, because mm-hmm. you look at the positive mm-hmm. side, man, and it's like, you take those moments where you think about the positive side, man, take those motherfuckers and just roll with them, because, like, I look at them on the positive, and I could talk, you know, for example, like, a lot of personal time off, I have a high degree of, like, I mean, I know my job inside out for the most part. Nobody's on me very much just because, I mean, I already know what I'm doing, right? So, I try to go in a very steady type of way, right? But there are some other points where I have to definitely step it up a little bit more, because this coming week, we have a lot of orders that have deadlines that I know that we have to kind of step it up a little bit. But there are some other times where we do have a little bit more downtime that we don't have to go as hard, you know. And those are positives for me. And I look at those positives and then I just stick with them and just try to, you know, try to keep those in my mind as much as possible to have a better outlook on my work environment.
How do you maintain that positive perspective, though? Because a lot of times, you know, you might find yourself in a particular situation where it's much easier to resort to negativity and frustration. Yeah. Like, how do you really influence that perspective to stay positive and not fall back in a negative mm-hmm. light that may, you know, have an outcome that is just...
I think it's about really kind of, like... sticking with people that have a very similar mindset as you, right? Not everybody's gonna agree on the same things. Like, there's gonna be people who are gonna be a little bit more negative on certain aspects of the job. But if you try to remind them that, hey, maybe this job ain't that bad, you know, like, and I think there's a lot of positive sides to a lot of different roles especially in our current company. There's a lot of roles that have a lot of positive things to it. And as long as you try not to bring out these negative things too often, there's gonna be people who that's all they want to speak of or speak about. And not saying don't talk to them, but kind of try to deflect the conversation a little bit to where it is more of a positive thing. And if they want to keep insisting, either two things are gonna happen. One thing is that they're gonna be a little bit more positive as well, or they're going to be not want to talk to you that much anymore, to be honest, you know?
No, that's awesome, though, that you're definitely trying to help shape one's perspective or help them see things from another's point of view right. and really maintain a positive outlook.
Right, because I don't mean to cut you off, but remember I did talk to you about one individual that is trying to leave the company, and I said, like, hey, I mean, like, I mean this with all due respect, man, but... at the end of the day, you have it really good. I mean, you don't have to really flex over to other parts of the department. You do your job. You come in. You do your job. And once you're done with your job, you really don't have much to do. And you can just, you know, and I kind of picking his brain a little bit as far as like why he wanted to leave. And it's just kind of like, I think there's more to it. But I feel like he felt that there wasn't the best of management. I guess I'm just like, well, I mean, you got to make the best of it, you know.
Yeah, there's only so much in your control.
Right, exactly.
Right? And how you look at things and really, you know, take a step back and process and see, okay, this is what I have the ability to change. This is what I do not have the ability to change. And you can take one of two, you know, mindset approaches to that. You can be very negative and resentful.
Right.
And that's just going to cross over into, you know, the daily life. Or you could maintain this positive outlook of, this is what I can do. This is how I can influence it. This is the change I want to make.
Right.
And really maintain that outlook through the thick, to be honest.
And I think that goes back to, like, just about anything. I know when my dad had his stroke, whatever, you know, I was trying to be as positive as I possibly could, right? Because, you know, you got to look at the positive and not just the negative, right? Because I knew of certain people that had head strokes, and they were in a lot different situation. I mean, a worse situation. And I just thought to myself, like, yeah, I can focus on the negative of, like, his disabilities that he has now. But if I focus on the beautiful things that are still there, when I mean beautiful, but it's like the good stuff, you know, like the fact that he's, first of all, he's still alive and he's still able to, you know, he's able to walk and you know, use one of his hands, and just because I know, and we didn't mean anybody there, but at the hospital, but we heard of people that were in the hospital that lost complete function of a certain, you know, like their lower body or a certain side of their body, and it's just like, or they're still in the coma, and it's just like, you know, we could have been those, you know, and it's just kind of one of those, goes back to, like, your perspective is your reality, because, hey, I'm going to perceive it as positive as I can, and it might come to bite me back in the end, because I used to say that, too, like, I'm like, well, you know, he's in a really, he's not as bad as he could have been, and I try to maintain a positive attitude, and sometimes I would kind of, like, take a step back and be like, you know, hopefully it doesn't bite me in the end, where maybe it is a lot worse than I really realize.
Right. I commend you for that, man. I wish I was there. You know, I'm going through a similar situation myself with my father. He had a stroke recently, and yes, trying to maintain a positive perspective, but damn, man, for myself, it's been very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say I have a negative outlook. There's a lot of frustration, though.
Right.
A lot of frustration. Not against him. It's just what has, unfortunately, been taken away from him. And just, you know, seeing your father not being able to enjoy life the way he used to.
Mm-hmm.
And really maintaining that positive outlook is so challenging, just because the progression is so slow.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, having that positive outlook of, yes, he's still here and whatnot, it's been a challenge for myself, just because me and my dad have had quite a few conversations.
Right.
And honestly, he just wishes that he would have gone.
Right. That's very that's hard to hear.
Yeah. Just because of his current limitations and how challenging it is to hopefully get back to a quality of life that he was at prior to the stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it is very challenging for me to maintain that positive perspective, because there's just a huge sense of loss.
Yeah.
And just feeling for him. So, you know, we can certainly take the high approach in that regard, but currently I'm having a really tough time with that. And it's not necessarily taking a negative perspective. It's kind of just looking at things for what they are. And it's kind of a neutral perspective in a sense. And there's just so much unknown that it's tough for me to take a positive outlook. And if I take that positive outlook, will it really have any influence on what's next? And what I mean by that is the progression he's made within this year, substantial. But will there be any more progression?
Right.
Who truly knows? And that's kind of where my perspective is like, fuck, man, is this it? Like,
right.
If it is, then damn, like, I feel for him, because maybe I can get him on a boat and he'll get struck by light, you know,
right.
Like, that's what he wants. And it's a sad thing to say, but unfortunately at the end of the day,
it's kind of going back to, like, if my dad could talk correctly, I think he kind of would probably say about the same thing too. Is like, I wish I would have just gone instead of being in this type of, you know, disability or, but, you know, going back, it's a perspective thing, you know, because mm-hmm. it's like, mm-hmm. you know, your dad can talk about it. My dad can't talk about mm-hmm. it because my dad cannot speak correctly. He just can't get the words out correctly. But my dad can walk a little bit more comparative to maybe your dad. You know?
Yep, exactly.
And then so it's kind of it's all a perspective, man. It's mm-hmm. all how you look at things and look at the, you know, you're not always going to be positive. That's just mm-hmm. the reality, right? Mm-hmm. One of my cousins told me, he's like, yeah, there's going to be good days and there's going to be bad days. And I swear, it's almost like he definitely knew what he was talking about, because he was literally... When my dad was in the hospital, so it was like there were some good days, and then there were some not so good days, and mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of a weird situation. I mean, it's an unfortunate situation, but it's part of life, unfortunately.
And how do we, you know, train our minds to wake up and take a positive outlook on things? Because there's a lot of times where I fall asleep with negative energy.
Right.
I dream about negative energy. I wake up with negative energy. I mean, at the end of the day, we're human. We're gonna we're gonna feel what we feel, but we do have the power of mind. I really want to tap into the energy where you have full control of mind to be able to think positively. You know, in ways that you're speaking of.
Right. I mean, that's kind of hard. Trying to tap into that positivity, I think, goes back to. I think almost your personality a little bit, where I'm a very upbeat, bubbly person.
Unless you're hungry.
Yeah, well that's just about anybody though. Hungry or sleepy. I think it just goes back. It's really hard to really tap into that type of positivity, because it's even myself, man. I'm not positive all the time. I just try to kind of fake it until I make it type of deal, you know what I mean? But like I said, it's kind of one of those weird things, because you try not to be as positive as other people, because I know people, even like my brothers or family members, that my mom or whatever can speak and kind of say the truth sometimes, and the truth is really negative, unfortunately. You know, it's kind of like, man, that's kind of a downer. So it's almost saying when you're too positive, you almost set yourself up to not fail, but just be disappointed sometimes, because the reality of the things is not everything is peachy as you want it to be, you know?
True. I definitely agree with, you know, just the reality and what life is in itself. Not everything is going to be positive. You know, a few weeks ago, I got in an accident with a deer. It is what it is. You got to fix the car. I'm thankful I wasn't injured.
Right.
You know, I'm positive about that. Negative about the car, because it's damaged. All I see is dollar signs.
Right. But all I see is.
But like, if we can truly adopt a mindset, you know, not necessarily looking at something positively, but really looking at something for what it is, and then taking that, processing it,
mm-hmm.
and developing a perspective of what can be done, what cannot be done, and being very neutral. I hate to call it a numb mindset, but really learning how to control your thought.
I think it really goes back to truly having that figuring out how to really not care. What I mean by not care, right? In certain situations, not every situation, right? For example, when you said you hit those deer and you kind of messed up your truck, right? Your level of, when you first got here, your level of anxiety, your level of, like, you were not the same person almost right off the bat when you got here, because you were seeing those dollar signs and or worried about what your dad's gonna say, whatever the case may be. With me, my perspective, if that would have happened to me, I was like, fuck, you know, I would have cussed up, I would have cussed and screamed in different languages and for a second or two, and I'm like, ah, fuck it. You know, it is what it is, you know?
Right.
It's kind of like certain situations, I kind of disconnect myself a little bit. And I, when I say I truly mean, like, you know, it's you know, it is what it is. It's mm-hmm. I really mean that. Mm-hmm. You know, it is what it is, and there's things that are way out of your control in that situation. Yeah, maybe the dollar signs, that's something that would definitely be on my mind, but then I'll start looking like, well, at least I got a car, a different vehicle to drive, and you know, at least I don't have to fix it up right away, because mm-hmm. I don't need a car right away. You know, I got something else to drive.
No, it's very interesting that you say that. Initially when things happened, it was like, oh shit. But as, you know, time progressed and I had, you know, the ability to sit back, process, and collect my thoughts, it's like, okay, yeah, we can get this done.
Right.
Now, that kind of leads me into a particular financial situation.
Right.
Right. An outsider's perspective, there's a lot of judgment towards bankruptcy,
right,
and things of that nature. Now, yes, there's a lot of anxiety and things that go along with it, but it's also in place to give you a fresh start. And there's a lot of ways to take it. You can certainly be negative. You can, you know, just shut down. But you can also take the approach of, it is what it is. This mm-hmm. is what's in my means.
Right.
You know, I work, I have X amount of dollars. This is truly what right. I can pay. I need to keep a roof over my head, a car on the road, myself fed. You know, if you have kids, mm-hmm. animals, whatever it may be, take care of the necessities, whatever's left over. Do your best to take care of those debts.
Right.
Now, if you truly cannot take care of those debts, it's a terrible situation. But there's also things in place to be able to get yourself back on your feet, so it doesn't happen to you again. So I'm just thinking about, you know, different perspectives. Like, an outsider's perception is like, oh shit, like, you know, really negative mm-hmm. towards the situation. Well, where, you know, the person in that situation is, you know, this is terrible, but these are truly the means I have. I need to take care of these necessities.
Right.
If I had extra, you know, I would definitely do so. I've learned from my mistakes. They will not happen again. It's just very interesting to have those opposite sides. So it's kind of like, you can't really obtain that perspective unless you're going into or you're in that situation,
right.
I should say. Not particular to this financial situation, but it just kind of leads me into, like, the amount of perspectives. You truly don't have perspective until you're in a certain
right.
situation.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's gonna be a lot of, you know, like, a lot of people will be quick to judge people by their actions, but they don't know the whole story behind it. You know what I mean? Like, they don't, until you're in that situation of, like, what led up to that point, everything that's behind the scenes that people don't see, how you got there, and you know, you don't know,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that perspective is definitely something that you gotta be able to look at certain situations and be, you know, be mindful that maybe what you see is not exactly what's there, you know.
Exactly, and that's why this, you know, this podcast is so interesting, specifically this discussion, because the amount of perspectives that are out there, you can compare and contrast them.
Right.
They're gonna, gosh, it's just, it's endless.
Mm-hmm.
But I think collectively, where we really want to be as a society and as a particular individual is, you know, truly look at the facts, look at what led up to that. Sorry, there's a mosquito
yeah,
in my ear.
I can hear it. I can hear it too.
Whew, man, scaring me. I kind of lost my
yeah,
train of
sorry.
Thought there. But yeah, no, just really going back to, you know, you as an individual, me as an individual, our perception, we can control that.
Yeah.
It's going to have a particular influence on an outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more we compare and contrast with others to get different perspectives, I think we can collectively, you know, create positive change,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, it goes back to how you look at things. I mean, it's one of those, you know, I come from a very humble beginnings, I guess, in a sense. And I know, you know, luckily I never really suffered a lot of things, but I know where my parents came from as far as how they were raised, and definitely a lot different comparative to how I was raised. If you kind of look at, if you strictly look at the poverty levels, yeah, I guess I didn't grow up rich. I didn't have everything I wanted, right? Or even wealthy, where I had, you know, a lot of stuff. But if you compare it to how they were raised, and, you know, like, I got to give a lot of credit to my dad and my mom, because, granted, my mom had, you know, my mom's parents were really nice people, and you know, but based on how my dad puts it about his parents, man, his parents were definitely, you know, God bless their heart and their souls, you know, but they were definitely not great people, and I have nothing but, you know, positive things to say about how I was raised, and the way that I see it sometimes. If people kind of looked at how I was raised, your average American would say, like, nah, man, that's total, I don't want to say cruelty, but that's totally, or definitely, they would definitely say that there's a level of weirdness, you know? But the way I see it is totally different, where, like, I know where my dad came from, and it's like, man, he's both of them, but particularly my dad, because he had a lot more, you know, negative things to say about his parents, and he's a great dad because he changed that family tree because of his perspective, and said, like, hey, I don't want to treat my kids the way that I was treated, you know. And unfortunately, when you have that type of abuse as a kid, you kind of transcend that to your kids as well. So
right. So his actual reality of growing up with a challenging family dynamic,
right,
led him in his later years of life, when he wanted to start a family, to have perspective, right, on what he did not want,
exactly,
and what he did want,
yeah, exactly,
from his, yeah, reality early on as a,
yeah,
child.
Mm-hmm. Now, was he always perfect? No, he was never. He's not, you know, always perfect. I mean, he had his own, you know, his own set of what do you call him? His own set of mental health, I guess, you know, mental things, mental roadblocks he would have to suffer through, you know what I mean? But I think at the end of the day, he persevered through those roadblocks. I mean, it's just based on your perspective, you know, not necessarily that's the only thing, but it does definitely help how you overcome these challenges.
Certainly.
Well, listeners, this has been a very interesting topic, and I didn't think we're gonna get this deep, but we got deep.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Oh no, it's great. I love it. We are going to take another quick break, and then we're gonna come back with the final five. It might be 10 this time because we're missing one, so we might get like about 7.5 minutes.
That's about how long average sex lasts, I think. I think it's scientifically proven.
Mine's like half a minute, but you know.
Hey, nothing wrong with that, bro.
Hey, as long
I
as
like to fuck, so it's like hours.
As long as I'm happy, that's what matters. We'll be right back.
It's a race, bro.
Hi, friends. Ian here. Do you enjoy atypical conversations about history? Do you like an occasional sip or three of whiskey? Then come on over to the Bar of Questionable Life Choices and join me for an episode of Why Whiskey. We're a history podcast with a whiskey problem. Or maybe we're a whiskey podcast with a history problem. We'll let you decide all that. On Why Whiskey, I'm often joined by guests as we cover historical events in America and around the world and the people that were involved. Throughout the show, we will taste a wide variety of whiskeys and share some knowledge about what it is that we are drinking. So if any of this interests you, come on up to the bar, grab a glass, and let's share some great stories. Cheers.
I don't have black on. I do have a black shirt. Yeah.
Nice.
A black shirt, tan shorts, where I got kind of dirty today because I was cleaning the grill, and red underwear.
Red?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, I saw them, and I was like, you know what? Today's the day that I'll wear red underwear.
Feeling frisky.
A little bit.
Any ladies decide to hop in those pants when they saw the red and the Latin swagger?
Once I took them off, it was a done deal. Anyways, final five. So because today is final five, and we're missing one of our hosts.
Rest in peace, Josh. We'll see you next week.
He's not dead.
I'm sorry. He's camping.
He's camping.
And we're camping outside.
Yeah, we are camping.
Camping with the podcast.
Would you call this a little bit of camping or no?
Oh, very much so. Okay. This is much more related to camping than getting a camper and hanging out watching TV.
That's very true.
This is awesome, man.
So what I wanted to talk to you today, right, because of the spirit of the whole camping, being out here in the wilderness, when you first came out here to the farm, and I want to talk to you about the first time, I was kind of nervous.
About me coming out?
Yeah.
Really?
So, what it was, it was kind of like I felt like, you know, my parents are going to meet my girlfriend for the first time. And, you know, just wanted to see what type of, you know, relationship they would build with you.
Did they think we're in a relationship?
No.
Thank God. No. I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing.
But I just want to get your thoughts as far as, like, and I know, Josh, I'm sorry, we're not supposed to ask questions, but as long as within 5 minutes, it's going to be okay. Okay.
A little disclaimer for the audience.
Yep. So what I want to know is, what were your initial thoughts when you first came out here to the farm, Alcaraz Zarco Farm?
Zarco Alcaraz. All right. So with that, you hit me with the coordinates. Okay. GPS'd it because I don't know Bangor that well. Right. And then I saw it was over an hour drive. I was like, damn.
Okay.
He fucking lives out there.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I was like, you know what? This is what up. I think I brought kayaks too.
Was it the first time?
I don't know. It might have been the second time. I really don't remember. I feel like maybe I had them.
The first time you brought some brush to burn.
Oh, yeah. That's why I came out because I needed to burn some brush. Yeah. And then didn't like a date cancel on me or something? Maybe that was another time.
I might have.
I've been out here so often. It's beautiful. But yeah, first time I needed to burn some brush, and you were so kind. Like, hey, come out here. We didn't burn it though. We just dumped it.
Yeah,
so
we did.
Might be some invasive species. So I was a little disappointed. Right. But coming out here, I was really excited, bro.
Yeah.
Just to meet your family, see your farm, see what you're about, just because you speak about it so much. And I know blueberries are near and dear, and you bleed them.
I'm a blueberry specialist.
Literally. And no, I think overall it was excitement, and driving by, I didn't really know how large the property was until you showed me.
Right.
And you were chilling in a hammock. I thought that was cool.
Okay.
Met your dad. He had a backwards cap on, just
overlooking,
you know, his property.
That's funny.
He looked like a hard motherfucker. I was like, okay, I can see where Fernando comes from.
Right.
But yeah, you're a lover, so I saw your parents. I met them. They were very nice. It was just very welcoming.
Right.
I guess I didn't have nerves just because, you know, we've known each other for 4 or 5 years now. Great friendship. I honestly call you, you know, a best friend, if not my best friend. And I think overall it was cool, man. Your brothers were out here showing me the property. So there wasn't anxiety. It was more excitement than anything.
Okay. What do you like about the farm? Like the whole, do you see yourself being out here as a countryman, you know, I feel like you come out here not often, but you know, often enough where I feel you kind of enjoy it being out here.
100%, man. I love this over city life. Like if I had the resources to do so, I would love to own property like this and get me a nice double wide with a material handling job.
That's funny.
Have a little German Shepherd and
a cuter German Shepherd, supposedly.
Well,
prettier.
He has great personality. Personality rules all.
That is true.
But yeah, no, I would love to adopt this lifestyle over what I currently have. You're away from people. You get to see the stars clearly. You get to burn whatever the hell you want.
But the only downside is the fact that you don't have a lot of luxuries, right? So you won't be able to go eat out very often because there's literally nothing out here except for McDonald's and some other little mom and pop shops that are very questionable. But that's one of the bigger downsides, I would say. And everything else is like so far, not terribly far, but you know, 10 minutes away. So if you want like a beverage of, you know, whatever you want, you have to drive 10 minutes away. Where literally where my apartment's at, I could literally walk across the street.
Right, right. And I think that's what I'm drawn to most is being away from society.
Right.
Being away from those, you know, commodities. Listeners, right. That is a car in the background.
Yes.
It is not an airplane. We are not under attack. we are safe on set.
Yes.
But yeah, I think that's really part of the appeal is not having anything within arm's reach.
Okay. Yeah, I was like I said, I think it was definitely exciting for you to come out here. You know, we've known each other for a long time, and I was just like, well, I guess it's and the thing that I really like about you in a sense is, you know, besides the what's the word?
Bromance.
Besides the bromance, when I took you to my cousin's house. And you were just like, oh yeah, let's do it, man. And it was like you jump into it, and you didn't really like ask. You did ask questions, but you weren't like hesitant about it. You know,
Be honest, I was nervous, but you know, you're my friend, and it's like you know that's your family, and I could only imagine they're as welcoming and as cool as you. And I guess maybe I was more concerned of how I would be. Perceived, but at the end of the day, I was like, "Hey, you know, you said it was cool, so then I'm good." Right. Like because we're tight like that, and I take your word. But yeah, initially I was a little bit nervous, but I was also calm. It's like all I can do is present who I am, and damn, they were super welcoming. Gave me you know food to eat. They were chill. Like it was awesome, man.
Right, you got some ribs, and
Yeah, I'd love to, you know, if there's ever another opportunity to meet more of your family or hang out or, you know, I don't know how to salsa, but I'd love to learn, you know.
Neither do I.
No way.
No, I don't.
You're lying to me right now.
No, so salsa is more of a Caribbean people.
Okay, so what is, like, your claim to fame when it comes to dance?
My hips don't lie, but
Shakira, is she from Mexico?
No, she's from Colombia.
She's so beautiful.
I hate Colombians.
You have a bad experience with them?
I did.
What happened?
I don't want to talk about it.
I love Dominicans.
Oh yeah, you did say you like Dominicans, didn't you?
Mm,
yeah.
That skin.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, that's that's what's been kind of in my mind for the last 5 minutes.
So what about me coming out to your place?
Oh.
Like, what kind of thoughts did you have real quick before we wrap it up in a glove?
Okay. No, I didn't have any bad thoughts. I was just kind of concerned that it was going to live up to your expectations. And I know you come from a city life, so I didn't know exactly what you were expecting in a country life.
That's fair. Very low-class city life.
Okay.
I'll let you know.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, and that's the other thing too is just like we're very, very humble, very I won't say poor. I think that's a state of mind. Just very humble, very humble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we will eat pizza the next day after being out for a whole night.
we talked about this danger zone.
I know the danger zone. Even though even though it's freaking like 30 degrees inside the freaking hotel.
Were you cold that night?
I was a little cold, but no. Nah. No, I was like, hey, as long as you're out here, you're having a good time, and you know, I think the first day that you were out here, I think Miguel was out here as well.
Yeah, we were playing music all sorts.
Yeah. So no, I think we all care about you, and we really like when you come out here and have a good time. I mean, it's very, very simple. I mean, just drinking beer and chewing the shit. I mean, that's what a really simple life.
That's what's up, man. What a great final five.
Yes.
You know, kind of leading into my thoughts and you know, being out in the great wilderness right now.
Talk to me, Micah. Talk to me.
Okay. So, blueberries, right?
I'm a specialist.
You're a blueberry expert. Okay. And the reason I bring this up is, I think it was Tuesday of this week.
Okay.
I think I bought, like, 20 pints of blueberries and froze them. Yeah, when I buy produce, specifically fruit, I buy like hundreds of dollars worth and freeze them just because I make smoothies every morning.
Wait a sec. Hold up. Hold the truck up.
Talk to me.
You bought blueberries.
A ton. I want to buy them from you, bro. I don't know how to do that because you're not a direct to consumer. You're a direct to distributor, okay. And I don't want to mess up that supply and value stream. And I really don't know how to approach you about buying blueberries because I'm afraid you're going to say just take them, and I don't want to do that. I want to give you the correct dollar, you know, the market value, and I hope you would. You know, hold me to that. Right. But I also did ask, is it still blueberry season? I think you said like it's coming to a close, or it closed. But yeah, it kind of led me to like, hey, I didn't look at the label on where these blueberries were from. They said they were organic, but they're super tart. Like they tasted like they were picked too early.
Okay.
So I just want to learn about the blueberry, how you harvest it, and you know. How do you distinguish a tart from a sweet blueberry? Is that the type of blueberry? Yeah, is that how soon it's picked? Like, what's up with that?
So, yes, you hit the nail on the head right there. It depends on what type of what variety it is and when you actually pick it, how ripe it is. And also some weird thing is that if it has defects, it's sometimes a little bit sweeter, right? So, different. So, unfortunately, these new... GMO. I call them GMO because that's what they are. Right?
So these some blueberries are truly genetically modified.
I think that most of them are. I mean, to be quite honest.
No way.
Oh yeah, that's how I feel about it. But I could be wrong. But a lot of these new varieties. I mean, it's not like so. I don't think that these varieties are natural to the North America continent.
Okay, so the particular blueberry, not the chemicals or food or whatever it may be used to grow these blueberries.
No, I think that a lot of these blueberries are these varieties, especially these new varieties, are made specifically for to be what's the word I'm looking for? To be harvested at greater quantities at a certain points of the season, right? So if they're picked here in the US, if they're picked here in the US, they are definitely made to be more to have a longer shelf life. So they're definitely made into this great specimen so that they can withstand the time pretty much. And if they weren't in the US, and even the northern part of the US, because if you look at some of the southern part of the US, such as Florida, and I think California and some other southern states, they're not supposed to be growing blueberries. It's just physically, or not physically, but originally they weren't grown there. They were mostly in the upper states.
So that's not the climate for them, but through genetic modification,
exactly,
they have the ability to grow. Correct. So that leads me into like blueberries being sold year round. Are those all sourced domestically within the U.S. or are we getting a lot of produce from neighboring or outside countries?
So I think that originally they used to get them from this great country called Chile.
Beautiful people.
Yeah, beautiful people. Chile and I'm gonna say Argentina, but mostly Chile. And then like that was like the growing up. That's like the number one producer that I knew of. Then it started going. So that's in South America, right? Then it started going to like different places in South America, like Peru. I see a lot of Peruvian and Bolivian blueberries nowadays. And when I say that, I see them more like in the off season. So if I see them like in December and January, that's when they're mostly from those countries. Here recently, I think I see them a little bit more. Not more, but I see a little bit more. Not more again. I see some Mexican blueberries as well. They're actually pretty good. I ain't gonna lie. To me, they taste pretty good. I don't know.
Next time you have some or you see some at the market, like, let me know, because I definitely want to try some Mexican blueberries, no doubt.
They have a different flavor, but to me they taste kind of good. They're almost like a little, I don't know. They taste good. They're different for sure.
And the blueberries you have on your farm right now, what kind are those from, or where did they originate?
So I don't know where they originated, but I think they're definitely originated from Michigan, I think. They're natural to Michigan, like.
So these are true Michigan-grown blueberries.
As far as I know, yes. Okay. Now, these are the two varieties that I know for sure that are, or not for sure, but some that I think are originally from Michigan would be like the Jersey and the Blue Crop.
Are those sweet or tart blueberries?
So the Jersey are the sweeter ones. Those are really sweet. No, it's like super sweet either, but they're definitely the sweetest ones that we have. The Blue Crop, they're a little bit. They're still sweet, but they have a little bit more tartness to it.
Okay, okay.
Then we have Elliot's. Those are definitely, to me, those are the most genetically modified that we have.
And you're growing these three blueberries on your property right now?
We have four.
You have four varieties?
Four or five.
Yeah, varieties,
yeah,
Ricardo?
Yeah.
Why are you not global?
Because we need capital. We need a good marketer. We need Micah.
For all you listeners out there, Ricardo and his family own an awesome blueberry farm, and all they need is a little capital. It will be a great investment.
Yes.
Greater than Bitcoin. Greater than any cryptocurrency.
Right.
The blueberry market will soon take off,
yeah,
and Ricardo just needs a little backing to,
yes,
make that happen.
Yes. Yes. No, I think it's a great business. I mean, it's a good business. It's a hard business. Because unfortunately there is a lack of labor. A lot of people do not want to do that job, and people who want to do that job or are okay to do that job are not legally allowed to, or kind of, you know, just they make it really hard for people for us to have employees.
Understood. You know, I'm always available. Just gonna come at a cost.
Yeah,
a blueberry cost.
Yeah, I understand. I think we're just gonna harvest it with the machine. I think it's we do have a blueberry harvester.
Understood. Yeah. Well, if you ever need help, know I'm here, and yeah, I will ask for some blueberries next time around.
Do you have good picking hands?
There's only one way to find out. Put them on the front line.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think that's going to do it for us tonight. Again, if you're listening to us, and if you hear crickets in the back, that is not sound effects. Those are real crickets. If you hear cars, those are real cars, because we are one with nature. Actually, I think my brother's here.
We covered it all.
Yes,
what
sir.
A great segue.
Yes, sir. Well, for everybody, again, if you've made it this far, go check us out on the Warehouse Rats Podcast Facebook page and Instagram.
We'll catch y'all later, folks.
Peace.